Kent. You're too invested in victory, almost as if you think it's a living thing.
It is a living thing, Maddox said.
Driving Force Galleon is a machine, nothing more.
I respectfully disagree, but that aside, if you know my thoughts, why say all this to me? O'Hara sighed.
I've begun to understand you better, young man. You yearn to race into danger with victory. It's exciting, challenging, and rewards your pride by having others heap accolades upon you for a job well done.
That is not why I've done those things, ma'am.
It's possible you don't consciously realize it, but it's true nonetheless.
Instead of becoming angry, Maddox grew thoughtful. Suppose you're right about me. What difference does that make to rescuing Ludendorff? Don't we owe it to the man to get him back?
Not necessarily,
O'Hara said.
Not if the cost is too high.
Maddox grew silent.
This is bigger than emotive responses,
the Iron Lady told him.
Until now, I have agreed with your desperate actions. Our plight was too awful for anything else. Now,
Maddox sat forward sharply.
Do you watch football, ma'am?
I do not. It is a deplorable sport, far too violent to no reasonable purpose.
It engages the emotions, certainly, and it's filled with strategy.
Violent strategies that force young men into far too violent of collisions,
O'Hara said.
That may well be, Maddox said. However, it offers us a fitting example. Football games are intense contests that often rise and fall due to momentum. Consider the situation where a team is losing and becomes desperate. The coach sends in a few trick plays along with possible long bomb maneuvers. A few of the plays work, the team scores, and the momentum of the game shifts their way. Soon, the formerly losing team is winning. Now, however, time is running out and the coach wishes to hang on to his lead. What does he do? He plays preventive defense and makes tepid offensive calls. The other team takes heart and attempts a few trick plays of their own. All of a sudden, the momentum shifts again, and the preventive coach causes his team to lose the game.
Are you suggesting I'm saying we play preventive defense?
O'Hara asked.
I'm afraid I am, ma'am. We have gotten where we are by being bold, not by playing it safe.
There is a time to protect our winnings, Captain.
Undoubtedly, Maddox said. This is not one of them, though. We have two enemies, at least. One of them is the new men. We have sent Admiral Fletcher to liberate the captured planets of C-Quadrant. At the same time, we have united regular humanity and begun massed production of warships. That is the correct strategy. You've pointed out a possibly more dangerous foe, Strand. What is the antidote to him? More knowledge. Professor Ludendorff can give us that knowledge. Therefore, we must rescue him at all costs. Strand knows this, and is likely doing everything in his power to stop us. That is why I must take victory to the Xerxes system and free Ludendorff from the builder traps.
O'Hara sat back.
You have presented a powerful argument, Captain.
Maddox knew when to keep quiet.
In such a case, where we both feel so strongly, going to the Lord High Admiral seems logical.
Maddox still said nothing. He admired the Iron Lady. One of the things he loved about her was her ability to see the argument, even when she didn't want to.
Yes, she said, leaning forward, clicking on her intercom. This is difficult for me to do. I hope you realize this.
I do, Maddox said quietly.
Major Stokes,
O'Hara said.
Yes, ma'am,
Stokes said out of the intercom.
Could you send in the Marines, please?
At once, ma'am,
Stokes said.
O'Hara removed her finger from the switch.
I'm going to have to ask for your sidearm, Captain.
He nodded, taking out his pistol and setting it on the desk. Is the Lord High Admiral in a restricted area? He asked. The door opened, and three combat Marines in body armor stepped through.
You misunderstand the situation,
O'Hara said.
You're not going to see the Lord High Admiral.
But
I hate to do this, but I know what you would likely do, which is to take victory on your own initiative. Since Galleon listens to you, I'm going to have to put you into temporary confinement. The starship must stay in Earth orbit for the near future. I hope you can forgive me, Captain. In the end, this is for your own protection.
Maddox glanced at the Marines, their hard stares and readiness to act. He suspected there were more of them in the outer office. Even if he could overpower these three, the others would swamp him. He regarded the Iron Lady. There was a reason why she'd gained the nickname.
You're making a mistake, ma'am. We need the professor. If I don't leave now, we may never have another chance. I'll see you in several weeks. Goodbye, Captain. I dearly hope you don't take this too hard.
O'Hara opened a drawer and swept the service pistol into it, shutting the drawer with a snap. One of the Marines put a gloved hand on Maddox's shoulder. If you'll come with me, sir, the man said in a gruff voice. Maddox glanced once more at the Iron Lady. She studiously scribbled a note, seemingly absorbed with the writing. Suddenly angry, the captain shook his shoulders free of the Marine's grip. The three combat men stiffened while the Iron Lady looked up. With his gaze on the ceiling as he struggled to maintain his decorum, Maddox stood at attention and gave the stiffest salute of his life. Then he spun around and marched out of the office. Belatedly, the Marines hurried after him. Chapter 11 17 days after capturing the Windsor League hammer ship, Pa Kerr received a signal from Strand. The Methuselah man was in the Inferno system with him, but Pa Kerr hadn't realized it until this moment. The new man ordered his sept into action. They began to maneuver the unwieldy vessel from behind Inferno 3, a hot world of seething equatorial lava with jungle poles where empty settlements stood. Transports had vacated the planet's sub-men over a year ago already. Pa Kerr sat in the hammer ship's command chair. Over the past 17 days, he had made a detailed study of the vessel. The reports had left via shuttle, giving the rest of the invasion armada's commanders a better understanding of the Windsor League battle wagon's strengths and weaknesses. The hammer ship had plenty of both. Not that either would come into play this time. Strand's present plan was more subtle than that.
Commander, the comm specialist, an 11th-ranked new man, said, the enemy is near.
Pa Kerr did not say a word in reply. Strand had ordered them behind Inferno 3 5 days ago, at least behind in relation to the system's Lahmer points. The Methuselah man had used his cloaked vessel to invaluable ends, often studying the various enemy formations in different star systems without their knowledge. Strand's star cruiser had an extra propulsion system, allowing it to make stellar jumps without the need of wormholes. He'd never shared this movement system with anyone else. It seemed to Pa Kerr that the Emperor should demand the secret from Strand. If the rest of the armada possessed the ability to jump without using Lahmer points. Pa Kerr's shoulders twitched. Obviously, the great Strand kept his secret for a reason. Together with the superior cloaking, it made the Methuselah man invaluable. Without him, the armada would have a much harder time keeping watch over the Grand Fleet's careful maneuvers without being seen in return. The Grand Fleet had bunched up for 2 weeks after losing the hammer ship. Now they had begun to loosen their advance again, spreading out once more. The first time, Strand had given the enemy time to enjoy the privilege. This time, he would snap a trap shut fast.
They're accelerating, Commander, the comm specialist said.
Pa Kerr could see that for himself. He also knew his orders and the plan. Possibly Strand expected him to have told his sept what the plan was. Pa Kerr had not done so for a particular reason. Subhumans reacted favorably to a person with wizardly foreknowledge. He wanted to see how far that translated with those of the superior race.
We will remain where we are,
Pa Kerr said. The others on the bridge ingested the news in silence. They did not openly turn to each other as sub-men would have done. Instead, they glanced slyly at each other, possibly attempting to assess each other's reactions before commenting.
The enemy vessels are building momentum, Commander, the comm specialist said.
You are perceptive,
Pa Kerr said, adding a subtle note of mockery to his tone. The comm specialist stiffened his shoulders. Everyone on the bridge understood the rebuke. The enemy vessels continued to accelerate. There were 2 Star Watch battleships, a carrier, 6 heavy cruisers, and 12 destroyers. The ships were under the command of a woman named Commodore Garcia. 2 years ago, she had faced them at Korea 323, and later in the Tanish system. Strand regarded her as a clever tactician. The Methuselah man said that would aid them here in the Inferno system.
Commander, the warfare specialist said, enemy probes have passed Inferno 3. The probes have begun transmitting images to the enemy flotilla. The Commodore will know that we're the only ship in the system.
Pa Kerr did not bother to acknowledge the statement. The minutes passed, enough so Garcia would have received the intelligence data. Yes, her ships began to increase acceleration. No doubt they believed they could capture the hammer ship or make him surrender.
Commander, the warfare specialist said, it is unwise to remain in orbit. We must maneuver to the inner system Lommer point and escape while we are able.
Pa Kerr regarded the warfare specialist. The new man wore a silver uniform with a close combat badge on his left pectoral.
Open channels with the flotilla's flagship,
Pa Kerr ordered.
I wish to warn them.
Commander, the warfare specialist said.
Pa Kerr leaned toward the close combat specialist.
Choose your next words with care, he warned.
The warfare specialist's lips peeled back as he stood. Pa Kerr likewise stood, staring at the other. The warfare specialist was 9th ranked and would be dangerous in a hand-to-hand fight. Perhaps he recalled Pa Kerr's higher status. The new man touched his combat badge. Such symbols meant much among them, as they were hard won. Pa Kerr doubted he could outfight the other hand-to-hand, therefore he would not try. If it came to that, he would outmaneuver the other, sidestepping the issue.
I am curious as to your plan, the warfare specialist said, sitting. I await your orders, Commander.
Pa Kerr turned to the comm specialist before the warfare officer saw his eyes glitter in triumph. This was a status victory, but he could not let the others see that he felt this way. That would diminish his superiority in the feat, as they would realize he saw it as a victory. A true superior would not feel that way. Thus, Pa Kerr acted indifferently to the concession. The comm specialist would surely interpret the eye glitter as the commander's eagerness to speak with the Commodore.
The channels are open, the comm specialist said.
Pa Kerr sat stiffly in the command chair. He stared at the main screen. In moments, Commodore Garcia appeared. She was a small, old woman with dark eyes and hunched shoulders. She also happened to be one of Star Watch's best tacticians. It was another reason why this victory would diminish the enemy's courage another notch.
Surrender or die,
Pa Kerr told her. The transmission took several seconds to reach the enemy ships. Once she listened to his ultimatum, the Commodore would have to mull over his statement, speak, and wait for the transmission to reach him.
I call on you to surrender, new man,
Garcia said in a sharp voice.
You have a single hammer ship, thus my vessels can easily destroy you. I know that you do not have any other ships behind Inferno 3. Furthermore, I have detected no sign of life on the planet. Even if you have automated planetary cannons, they will not help you today. Decide, invader, as I am about to launch missiles at your ship.
Pa Kerr did not hesitate.
I am speaking to dead people. Remember, you had your chance. Now, your fate is upon you.
Are there cloaked vessels with us, Commander? The comm specialist asked.
Pa Kerr kept the irritation off his features.
There is only one cloaked vessel that could remain hidden from Star Watch. Yes, it is with us.
The others on the bridge visibly relaxed.
But Strand will do nothing to help us today,
Pa Kerr said. The others looked at him with what appeared to be faint surprise. For new men, that was like standing up and shouting their wonder. Another transmission arrived.
I expected no less from you, new men, Garcia said. It is just as well. Humanity doesn't need your kind. Goodbye, invader. Your death is on your own head.
They have launched 5 Titan-class missiles, the comm specialist said.
That is too few,
Pa Kerr said.
By the time the missiles reach us, the warfare specialist said, our ship will be in range of the battleship's heavy lasers.
True,
Pa Kerr said. The two specialists traded glances with each other.
I have a surprise for the sub-men,
Pa Kerr said.
It surprises me that neither of you has surmised that yet.
I cannot fathom the surprise, the comm specialist admitted. The warfare specialist thought about the problem with a furrowed brow.
On the main screen, 5 destroyer-sized missiles left the battleships and began to accelerate hard for the hammer ship.
We must have mines, the warfare specialist said. A new kind of mine, he added.
Pa Kerr pointed at him.
That is well reasoned.
The warfare specialist dipped his head at the compliment. The comm specialist tapped his board furiously.
I do not detect any mines.
I would be appalled if you had,
Pa Kerr said.
The mines were strewn by Strand some time ago. He analyzed the enemy commander and set the stage for her. These mines are part of the Methuselah man's unique arsenal.
But why plant them here now? The warfare specialist asked. Such a superior tool should only be used at the maximum moment. We could have used the surprise in a larger battle where it would have given us bigger rewards.
That, too, is well reasoned,
Pa Kerr said.
However, the implication is clear. Strand only has a few of these special mines.
All the more reason to save them for a more decisive encounter, the warfare specialist said.
Wrong,
Pa Kerr said without emotion. In truth, he seethed with inner exultation. To teach these two such a truth would gain him esteem in their eyes. They would pass this esteem to the others and cause his sept to trust him even more.
The critical point today with these mines is not physical destruction, but something more powerful,
Pa Kerr said.
Strand seeks to destroy their confidence by elevating our superiority to an incredible degree. They will stumble into a mine ambush and afterward believe we possess thousands of such mines. That will make them inordinately cautious everywhere.
Ah, the warfare specialist said. Yes, I see.
The comm specialist nodded with understanding. Time passed. The Titan-class missiles reached 50 G's acceleration.
The Commodore is hailing us again.
Put her on,
Pa Kerr said. Commodore Garcia appeared on the screen. She hunched forward to stare at him.
I will offer you one more chance to surrender.
He said nothing.
Do not think your minds will save you, she said. We have better sensors than you realize. We are beginning to maneuver around the hidden mines. Their blasts will brown our shields, nothing more.
The two specialists turned wordlessly to Pa Kerr.
Come, Garcia said. Why throw away your lives? Surrender to us and let us end the useless fighting.
Pa Kerr motioned to the comm specialist. He tapped his board. The Commodore's image disappeared. In her place were the various flotilla vessels.
9 Saturn Elephant 6-3,
Pa Kerr said. On the screen, hidden mines appeared. The Star Watch vessels, indeed, maneuvered around them. The mines moved through gradational forces, but they would not be able to move fast enough to put themselves anywhere near the accelerating vessels.
Commander, the comm specialist said, this is a disaster. Pa Kerr nodded to himself.
Put the Commodore back on the screen.
Are we surrendering? The comm specialist asked in a dull voice.
Is that what you wish?
Pa Kerr asked. No, the warfare specialist said. We must dominate or perish. We have no other choice.
Well?
Pa Kerr asked the comm specialist. It has been an honor to fight for the race, the comm specialist said.
Well spoken,
Pa Kerr said.
Now put the Commodore back on the screen.
With a single tap, the comm specialist did so.
You understand your hopelessness,
Garcia said.
Surrender or die,
Pa Kerr told her.
Pride goeth before the fall,
Garcia said.
Have you heard that saying before?
Pa Kerr stared at her.
A sage wrote that a long time ago,
she added.
The sage was a fool,
Pa Kerr said.
Goodbye, Commodore Garcia.
Goodbye, she said, almost sounding sad. That was strange, pity coming from a subhuman. It caused Pa Kerr to shudder with revulsion. He despised pity directed at him. Only admiration would do.
Philosopher 8-7 hippo, he said.
The images on the screen changed once more. Another set of minds appeared. These were already in the correct location. Commander? The comm specialist asked.
I have given our ship the code words that turn on the sensors we installed 5 days ago. Those sensors come from the Methuselah Man's Star Cruiser. What you see are the real and rare hidden mines. The others were there for the submen to find in order to make them maneuver into the correct position and let them feel confident. Remember, it is their confidence in themselves that we are most attempting to destroy.
Are those mines powerful enough to annihilate the flotilla? The comm specialist asked.
Strand believed so,
Pa Kerr said. Is the Methuselah Man always correct?
Pa Kerr paused before answering. We know he is not always right.
Time passed. The warfare specialist targeted the approaching Titan-class missiles. Giant railguns fired round after round. It would take time for those rounds to reach the missiles. These were beam-firing missiles, though, and might attack before the railgun rounds destroyed them. Pa Kerr glanced at a timer.
Dampen the special sensors, he said.
The comm specialist complied. The hidden mines disappeared from the main screen, although everything else remained. Soon, the invisible Nova mines ignited. They overloaded the regular sensors, showing Pa Kerr and his bridge crew expanding whiteness in space. Titan missile beams reached them. The Nova mines had been far behind the missiles. The first shield buckled, turning black. The middle shield absorbed what got through the first. More beams should have struck the shields, those from the battleships and heavy cruisers now in firing range.
The Nova mines must have worked,
the warfare specialist said. The overload of the regular sensors meant they couldn't see yet what had happened to the flotilla.
Commander, the comm specialist said, I'm re-energizing the superior sensors.
Pa Kerr nodded. Soon they viewed the mass debris where most of Commodore Garcia's flotilla had been. The carrier had survived along with 2 heavy cruisers and 4 destroyers. One destroyer showed severe damage, hard radiation leaking from its battered engines. All the surviving ships were in the process of changing their heading, still accelerating hard. They would sweep far past the Hammer Ship and Inferno 3. No doubt they would attempt to use Inferno 1 to pivot and head back to an outer Lahmer point and eventual escape.
Begin acceleration toward them,
Pa Kerr said.
If they decelerate to fight us, the war specialist said, we might be on equal footing. One Star Watch carrier, 2 heavy cruisers, and 3 good destroyers should defeat a Hammer Ship.
Even if Strand's hidden star cruiser helped us,
Pa Kerr said.
No, we would have the advantage then. Is he going to help us?
Pa Kerr had already told them Strand would not help them.
He said,
Strand's help is meaningless, as the sub-men will run away.
I would not run if I commanded their vessels, the warfare specialist said.
No,
Parker said.
But you are superior to the sheep.
It wasn't obvious at first, but the surviving ships did indeed run, and they accelerated as fast as they could. The one destroyer never made it, though, exploding 7 hours after the initial mine explosion.
Where is Strand? The warfare specialist asked later.
We are not attempting to destroy the last ships,
Parker said. We must whittle down the Grand Fleet ship by ship when the opportunities present themselves, if we are going to win the final encounter,
the warfare specialist said.
Parker couldn't believe his ears. Didn't the other realize how powerful of a statement this was?
The sub-men ran from a lone hammer ship. It showed an unwillingness to engage in battle, even on superior terms. Another word for it was cowardice. The worst disease for a soldier had infected the survivors. The best option was to let the fear carrier go to infect the rest of the ships of the Grand Fleet. The Methuselah Man's master plan needed widespread fear in the Grand Fleet. Given enough time and enough enemy fear, and Strand would give their side a miracle, one that would change the entire course of the war.
Chapter 12.
Several days later, Sergeant Riker worked in his yard. He had a small billet in the Swiss countryside, a cottage with a white picket fence. Normally, when he was off on a mission, old Mrs. Tell kept his home clean, coming in 3 times a week to dust the place, cook a meal on his stove, watch a show, feed his dog, and make sure the automated watering system had watered all his flowers, shrubs, and trees. One thing Riker detested was coming home to an unlived-in house, one that felt empty and devoid of life. He loved the feeling of normality in his house, that people consistently used the place. Since he so seldom was here, it had become even more of a fetish to him. The sergeant wore work clothes and dug a hole for a new tree. He carefully piled dirt to the side. Once the hole was the correct depth and width, he laid the store-bought tree onto its side and worked the dirt and root system out of the plastic pot. He crumpled the solid packed dirt so the roots could breathe. Then he set the tree in the hole, used his hands to shovel dirt beside it, and finally reversed his shovel, using the handle to poke and tap the dirt tight. He shoved some growth sticks into the soil afterward so the new tree would have plenty of nutrients. Standing, feeling a crick in his back, Riker eased his torso straighter. While dusting his hands, he admired the new tree, a poplar. Once he put the new drip line into place, everything would be set. Yes, the poplar would definitely add to the cottage's charm. Riker turned to grab the spade and stopped in shock. An apparition flickered into appearance. It faded before solidifying a perfect hollow image of Professor Ludendorff. He could see through the image to the back door 15 feet away.
Sergeant Riker,
the hollow image said, using the professor's tone just as Riker remembered it.
What do you want? The sergeant asked.
We need to talk.
Riker shook his head.
Go see the captain. I'm not interested in anything you have to say.
Where is the captain?
Riker shrugged. He had no idea. The young man had simply disappeared several days ago. It wasn't like Maddox, most of the time. The captain could at least have given him a hint about what was going on.
You don't know where he is, do you?
The hollow image asked.
I suppose I don't, Riker said. What is that to you?
Aren't you interested in what you don't know?
Riker puzzled out the meaning before shaking his head. The hollow image appeared annoyed at the answer. Riker couldn't help it, but he grinned. The professor had grated on him. The man had been too smug by far. It seemed the hollow image was indeed a replica of the professor. Riker could see how it could have convinced the captain of its genuineness.
I've come to you because I believe your captain has been taken into protective custody,
the hollow image said.
Riker rolled that over in his mind. He hadn't thought of that. Could it be true?
How do you keep track of the captain's comings and goings? The sergeant asked.
Does it matter?
Of course it matters, Riker said. I'd also like to know how you knew where to find me.
I astonish you by coming to your house to see if you're home, the professor asked. Why would that be surprising?
Riker muttered under his breath before asking, How can you appear like this? What's your operational range?
None of that concerns the issue at hand, the hollow image said. If victory doesn't start soon, I'm not going to be at the Nexus when you finally arrive. Time is critical.
Even if that's true, Riker said, what are you expecting me to do about it? I'm just an old man who knows a few tricks to keep his gun ready and fire when it's most needed.
That gun is definitely needed now, Sergeant.
Riker smiled. Professor, you've come to the wrong man. I can't help you.
You disappoint me, Sergeant. I thought you had greater imagination.
No, sir. That's the captain.
The hollow image eyed him, finally shaking its head.
I shall have to seek out Meta, it seems. Where is she?
Don't know, Riker said.
You're lying.
Don't know about that either, Riker said.
I fail to understand your unconcerned attitude.
That's because you're a genius, seeing 100 angles in a thing and wondering which one you'll try to solve. Me? I'm a sergeant. I know about pay grades and keeping my nose clean. See this place? It's me to a T.
The hollow image glanced around before shaking its head again.
If...
You're wasting your time, Professor. I don't care about you enough to risk my career.
They've imprisoned your captain.
That's not my problem, Riker said. Making sure I receive my pension when my stint is over?
Bah!
The hollow image said, throwing up its ghostly hands. Afterward, it disappeared. Riker kept staring at the spot. His mind whirled at the implications of what the thing had told him. A second later, the sergeant sprinted for the back door. He burst through, tracking dirt onto his wood floor, something he usually never did. He grabbed a comm unit on the kitchen counter, activating it. A moment later, Galleon answered.
Listen to me, Riker said in a rush. I think this could be important.
Lieutenant Valerie Noonan sat at a station on Victory's Bridge. It was a large, circular area with the commander's chair in the center of the room, presently unoccupied. Valerie peered at a screen on her panel. It showed Antarctica with heavy cloud cover as the starship passed below the Earth. To Valerie, it seemed that the starship passed over the most beautiful planet in the galaxy. The lieutenant wore her uniform. Most people considered her beautiful with long, brunette hair. She'd been letting it grow since the destroyer's destruction. She had also lost a few pounds since then, a result of more practice in the combat room than any conscious effort on her part. She wanted greater proficiency at hand-to-hand combat. Because of that, her uniform needed altering. It didn't fit quite as snugly as it used to, giving her a slightly rumpled look, in her opinion. For months now, she had been in effective control of Star Watch's greatest combat vessel. The control had only been while in Earth orbit. Still, it was an honor to run the starship on a day-to-day basis. She had followed every routine with scrupulous precision. While she had learned the art of command while in danger from the best, Captain Maddox, in her heart, Valerie wanted perfect routine in these things. Yes, a good starship captain had to make fast decisions well, but she had a strong tendency to stick to regulations, as it felt better doing it that way. Maybe the routine these past months had rubbed off on her, or maybe the perfect routine had rubbed away the hard-won knowledge of space combat while in dire straits. Valerie recognized all those things. She also knew that she felt much more comfortable running the starship like this. She had trained long and hard to win a posting to the Space Academy. She had earned everything she had ever gotten in her life
because she had not been born with any of the advantages or privileges of being in a taxpayer family. She had grown up in Detroit, a welfare city if there ever was one, and she had come up the hard way and was damn proud of her achievement. A few days ago, Galleon had gotten antsy for reasons she didn't understand. Fortunately, the alien AI had settled down to the regular routine. Valerie appreciated that and hoped to keep it that way for the rest of her posting this time around. The lieutenant swiveled around on her seat. Dr. Clifford was hunched over a weapons board. He was a tall man in a white lab coat and possessed wavy blonde hair and the bluest eyes. The doctor looked like a surfer and had to be the most handsome man she had ever seen. Valerie was usually on the bridge when Dr. Clifford studied Victory. She tried to be as helpful as possible. After all, that was her chief duty. Star Watch needed Victory's weapon systems duplicated if they were going to beat the new men. The doctor happened to look up, catching Valerie staring at him. She blushed, nodded, and turned away.
"Do you know what bothers me the most?" Dr. Clifford asked in his rich voice.
Valerie faced him again.
"It's the ADOC mindset," the doctor said. "It veers away when ours would keep going straight. They did not look at matters the same way we do. But it's difficult to know when they're going to do that. The ADOCs had a very mathematical bent of mind."
"That's fascinating,"
Valerie heard herself say.
"I think so, too," the doctor said. "I wonder if you could help me for a minute."
"I'd love to,"
Valerie said, surprising herself with her bubbling willingness. She had never acted like this before. She rose from her position and stopped short. A hollow image appeared before her. It had a humanoid shape, although it was much shorter than a regular man or woman. The ADOC hollow image had ropey arms and extremely deep-set dark eyes. It was Driving Force Galleon, the image of the living ADOC who had commanded the starship 6,000 years ago. His engrams had been imprinted into the ship's AI, forever changing it with its growing personality.
"Hello, Valerie,"
Galleon said. His voice was still slightly robotic, although it had achieved a little more warmth than before.
"Hi, Galleon,"
Valerie said, stepping around him. The hollow image shifted, standing before her again.
"Could I have a word with you, Lieutenant?"
Galleon also had a sharper image than he used to. It showed his facial skin to greater effect than ever. The texture seemed like old saddle leather kept out in the sun too long. If one looked closely enough, she saw faint lines crisscrossing the ADOC's leathery skin. The skin offset the deep eyes more, making it seem as if an owl peered from out of a hole in a tree.
"I'm busy right now," Valerie said. "Maybe we can talk a little later." "I would like to speak to you now,"
Galleon insisted. Valerie glanced past the hollow image at Dr. Clifford. He watched them. She smiled. The doctor smiled back, and it put goosebumps up and down Valerie's arms.
"I have work to do,"
Valerie said, and she did something she had never done before. She walked through the hollow image. Galleon winced at that, spinning around, watching the lieutenant hurry to Dr. Clifford.
"Doctor,"
Galleon called.
"I would like a private word with the lieutenant on the bridge."
Valerie stopped, turning in surprise.
"Is something wrong?"
she asked.
"Oh, no,"
Galleon said in a carefree manner.
"It is a routine maintenance. I wonder if you forgot about it, Lieutenant."
"Routine?" Valerie asked. She couldn't believe she would have forgotten a routine maintenance scheduling. She plotted all those into her tablet weeks ahead of time.
"Just a minute,"
she told the doctor. Giving Galleon a stiff glance, she returned to her station and picked up her tablet. Clicking it, she checked the schedule. She didn't see.
"Send him away,"
Galleon whispered in her ear.
Valerie looked up in exasperation.
"What is this about?"
she asked sharply.
"Please," Dr. Clifford said. "This is Driving Force Galleon you're addressing. Shouldn't we accord him the highest respect?"
Valerie seemed taken aback by this statement. Clifford was more than just a weapons specialist. He also had a master's degree in XT relations. XT meant alien contact. Galleon was one of Earth's few aliens they had ever contacted.
"Would you like me to leave, Driving Force?"
the doctor asked.
If you do not mind,
Galleon said. Of course not, the doctor said. I'll see you in a while, he told Valerie.
Yes,
she said, trying not to sound crestfallen. The doctor had never asked for her help like this before. Would he remember to pick up where they had almost left off? Taking his kit, the doctor left the bridge. Something seemed to pass across Valerie's face at the man's departure. She turned to Galleon with disinterest.
Well?
She asked. The hollow image peered at the hatch and then at Valerie.
Do you desire to mate with the doctor?
What?
Valerie asked, outraged at such a personal question.
How dare you ask me something like that?
Yes, I disremembered. Some humans are quite private about reproductive procedures. I expect I interrupted a mating ritual. Is that correct?
Please, Galleon, don't be gross.
In what manner was my observation gross? I fail to understand.
Never mind, Valerie said. What's so important anyway? There isn't any scheduled maintenance.
This I know.
So you lied to me?
I practiced disinformation in order to lull Dr. Clifford. Do you think Captain Maddox would have approved of my maneuver?
For the first time today, Valerie studied Galleon. The slightly bewildered look on her face faded away, replaced by sharp suspicion.
What have you done now, Galleon?
I have been in communication with Sergeant Riker.
And?
Valerie asked.
He is worried about the captain.
What has the sergeant up in arms?
The hollow image Ludendorff has contacted him.
Hollow image? Ludendorff?
That is correct, Galleon said.
Valerie gave the ad hoc hollow image an even more suspicious stare. She hadn't gotten along with Captain Maddox in the beginning. She didn't approve of his methods, and she hadn't altogether trusted him. The Lord High Admiral had similar feelings. After all the small crew of Starship Victory had been through, and all the times Maddox's unorthodox methods had saved them, Valerie had learned to trust the captain with her life and reputation. Now, it appeared, something was up again.
Maybe you'd better start from the beginning, she told Galleon. What's going on?
The AI gave her a lengthy rundown, including the data concerning Shanghai, the kidnapping androids, the human test Maddox had undergone, and now his disappearance.
Back up just a minute, Valerie said. You slipped something in during the story. You said Riker told you to keep watch of Maddox.
This is true,
Galleon said.
You do remember I told you to tell the other person first.
Yes, but because of the surprise party.
What surprise party?
Valerie asked.
The one for Captain Maddox,
Galleon said. Valerie stared at the hollow image.
Don't you realize that Riker lied to you?
I had given that a 39% probability. Since the probability of him telling the truth was at 47%, I chose to believe the sergeant.
Well, your 47% proved wrong.
I will add that to my humanity data.
Okay, fine, Valerie said. But let's not get sidetracked. Do you know where they took Maddox?
He is in an underwater maximum security area where Greenland used to be.
That can't be right, Valerie said.
What's left of Greenland is still a radioactive mess. Everyone knows that.
The lieutenant referred to planetary bombardment 50 years ago, the key event that caused the creation of the Commonwealth of Planets. Back then, the nations of Terra had fought a hot war using colony world strength. One side had dropped hellburners pulverizing Greenland, making the former mass into 1,000 radioactive islands. The outrage led to the first proposals concerning Star Watch as a protective organization.
Tell me about the underwater facility,
Valerie said. Galleon waved a hollow image hand. Another hollow image appeared, showing an underwater security complex. The AI pointed out a column that went up into the stratosphere.
What's that?
Valerie asked.
The safe zone, Galleon said. Transports going straight down avoid lethal dosages of radiation. The problem is that the zone is constantly watched by the best detection devices Star Watch possesses.
Did the captain commit a crime?
Valerie asked.
Negative,
Galleon said.
Brigadier O'Hara does not want the captain leaving in me to rescue Professor Ludendorff in the Xerxes system. You'd better explain how you know that.
Galleon did so. Valerie frowned.
I still don't understand how you listened in to the Brigadier's conversation to Maddox. I am tracking the captain with my superior surveillance systems. How do you say? It proved to be child's play. No one likes a braggart, Galleon. Noted, the AI said. In the future, I will try to refrain from speaking about my greatness. That's a relief, Valerie said, rolling her eyes.
She put her hands behind her back afterwards, staring up at the main screen. Antarctica still showed below.
We must rescue the captain, Galleon said. And go against a Star Watch directive, Valerie said. I don't think so. We are a family, is that not so?
Valerie scowled.
This one is too big for me. I can't just... Can we please forego the platitudes to appease your conscience? Galleon asked. I know you will see the logic given time. You don't know anything of the kind, Valerie said hotly, beginning to get angry. I suggest you gather the others, Galleon said. By the time you feel comfortable with the idea... No, Valerie, surely you realize the Brigadier is watching Victory. She may be monitoring your calls with Riker, too. You are correct on both points, Galleon said. That is why I made certain those spy devices heard a different conversation than the actual speech. How did you manage that? I can explain, but I am more interested in your change of mind. By your bearing, I see you mean to rescue the captain.
Valerie's chest rose and fell. Sometimes Galleon could be too much. The ad hoc probability analyzer was spooky in its accuracy.
I have a question, Galleon said. You are the present commander. You now agree with my assessment. Therefore, knowing the Brigadier is ready for us to act, how do you suggest we rescue the captain?
The lieutenant's scowl intensified. She had been one of the few officers to live through the early encounters with the new men. Through the years, she had read 100 tactical manuals on space combat. She knew just about every procedure. She had also been watching Maddox these past years, beginning to appreciate his unorthodox style, how it often caught people by surprise, a valuable military virtue. Maybe it was time to practice a Maddox maneuver.
Valerie, Galleon asked, are you well? The look on your face. Let me think, Galleon. I may have an idea. It's going to be a sneaky one, too. Excellent. Then you believe the captain is right regarding Ludendorff?
She did believe that. But it was another thing entirely taking matters into her own hands, the way Maddox did all the time. It could ruin her career if she did this. The idea of that left her breathless. Yet one thing rang clear in her mind. Maddox believed the Ludendorff hollow image. The captain had been right too many times for her to believe he was wrong now. The football analogy had hit home. Galleon had told her of the Maddox-O'Hara conversation. Valerie had watched many football games on the hollow vid with her father before he'd passed away. With Strand on the loose and Ludendorff locked away, it seemed like it might be time for one more long bomb mission, with Victory acting as the football.
Chapter 13. Several days after Galleon and Valerie's talk on the bridge of the starship, Captain Maddox chafed at his confinement. He'd been finding it increasingly difficult to maintain a stoic indifference. Like a wild beast, cages grated on his psyche. His muscles twitched constantly with an intense desire to explode into action. It was one thing to lie in wait as a predator. Then he could show exemplary patience. To be trapped like this, not knowing how long it would last. Maddox lay on a cot in his room, with his right ankle resting on his left upthrust knee. He stared at nothing in particular. He'd grown bored watching movies and could no longer stomach reading an e-book. For several days in a row, he had exhausted himself in exercise. That, too, paled as he endured lockup.
Star Watch Marines guarded the prison. By the clangs and strange groans, Maddox had guessed some time ago that the structure was underwater. Did the Iron Lady believe?
"Sst, Captain,"
someone whispered from incredibly nearby. Maddox had been tapping his right foot in the air. That stopped. He lay perfectly still on the cot, not even turning his head.
"Good. Good, that's very good, Captain. Don't let them know you're talking to me."
Maddox forced his brow to smooth out. The whispering voice, it was Ludendorff. Was it possible the alien tech had breached Star Watch's best security? That made for grave concerns, particularly if the new men had this technology as well.
"If you can hear me," the Ludendorff hollow image whispered, "continue to tap your foot in the air."
Maddox did so.
"Excellent, excellent," the hollow image said. "We shall continue to communicate like this. You will swing your foot up once for yes and twice for no. Do you understand?"
Maddox swung his foot up once.
"As always, you are a quick read, Captain. You may be interested to know that I have spoken to Sergeant Riker twice. He fooled me the first time, as impossible as that is to believe. The second, he told me your family's plan. Does that sound right to you?"
Maddox indicated yes with his foot.
"Do you know where you are?"
Tap, tap, indicated no. The hollow image Ludendorff explained about the underwater Greenland security complex. Maddox continued to listen with his eyes unfocused. It had taken Galleon long enough to let the others know what had happened. That had been his whole card the entire time. The ancient alien vessel felt beholden to him for turning the AI back on, when everyone else had been for leaving the Adok artificial intelligence off. The question became this: did Maddox care to buck all of Star Watch? He had pretended to do that once at the Brigadier's orders. This time, it would be the real thing. As he listened to the invisible hollow image explain the plan, the captain silently debated its possibilities of success. He'd had a growing dread during his confinement. What if the Iron Lady planned to keep him down here indefinitely? Brigadier O'Hara had been his chief supporter among Star Watch. Now that she had done this to him, others might begin a whispering campaign against the hybrid. The Brigadier's actions would show others that she secretly distrusted him. At least that's how many might take it. Despite everything he had done for Star Watch, those who disliked him would become comfortable again with the idea of placing him under guard at worst, or under watch at best. Maddox knew enough about himself to realize this was partly self-justification and partly hurt feelings on his part. He could not endure the confinement much longer. It was the one thing he truly dreaded, being locked away with nothing useful to do for a long time. Yes, he would follow his family's lead. Maybe the Brigadier had a point. He didn't fully trust the Ludendorff hollow image either. This could be Strand pulling a fast one. Yet he would rather risk that with a gun in his hand than lying on his back in confinement. Besides, this was no way to reward his hard work. He had earned more trust than this. The Brigadier had gone too far. Unless one actually committed a crime, no one had a right to lock up another, even if the primary reason was love. There was one little stickler, though. Was he risking humanity by trusting his own judgment? Maddox sighed. He was willing to take that risk and accept the consequences. To do otherwise was to do damage to his spirit, remaining locked away down here. There was an ancient saying concerning the matter: it is neither wise nor prudent to go against conscience. Martin Luther had said that during his trial at Worms, when he'd begun the Protestant Reformation. Maddox's conscience told him to act, even if against the higher authority over him. Humanity needed Ludendorff, and Maddox owed the arrogant Methuselah man. The captain couldn't let the professor rot in the Nexus as a prisoner. He realized that now, more than ever. The captain closed his eyes, continuing to listen to the whispering, invisible hollow image. Major Stokes strode down a corridor of the underwater facility. He had come at the Brigadier's command to make sure the captain was doing well. Her orders confining Maddox had been eating at the Iron Lady. She fretted constantly about the captain and had even developed a nervous tic.
"I shouldn't have done it,"
the Brigadier had told Stokes more than once.
"He's too reckless," the Major had told her.
"It's one of his charms."
"No, he's a rascal, ma'am, an incorrigible idealist."
"The captain would not appreciate you saying such a thing."
"I realize Maddox thinks of himself as hard-hearted. Yet he's a romantic of the old school. He thinks of himself as a knight-errant, a tarnished one, no doubt."
"Is that so wrong?"
the Brigadier had asked.
"In our line of work, it most definitely is,"
Stokes had said. For a time, neither of them had spoken.
"No,"
the Brigadier had finally said.
"He won't understand. It will chip away at his morale. We're going to need the captain again."
"We've been lucky with him, ma'am. One of these days he's going to go too far. He'll pull down anyone associated with him. We've seen the type before."
There had been more along the same line. It hadn't helped the Iron Lady. She knew Maddox would hold this confinement against her. The captain tried to play the cool intelligence operative. The hybrid even managed to fool some people. In reality, a fire burned in that one. He would blaze through existence, burning out far too soon. The Major showed his pass to the Marine guard on duty. The Marine nodded, speaking into an intercom. The door buzzed and Stokes entered the surveillance room. Three individuals watched the various detainees on monitors, Maddox included. Stokes spoke a few words to them. A woman pointed out Maddox, stretched out on his cot.
"How long has he been like that?"
Stokes asked. The woman shrugged.
"An hour, maybe?"
she said. Crossing his arms, Stokes watched the captain. Every few seconds, the right foot moved. The captain seemed a little too poised. The longer Stokes watched, the more he disliked what he was seeing.
"Has he become listless?"
Stokes asked. She shrugged, her harsh features showing incomprehension.
"Does he seem bored?"
Stokes asked.
"No," she said. "More like stir-crazy. He's not going to last long."
Stokes cocked his head.
"Why do you say that?"
"I know the signs," she said. "That one doesn't like prison."
"Who does?"
"You'd be surprised," the woman said. "Most criminals have a lazy streak a kilometer long. Not that one, though. He's going to give us problems soon."
Stokes continued to watch Maddox. The foot moving began to get to him. He watched the foot more closely. One move, two, one, two.
"It's a code," Stokes said.
"What's that?"
the woman asked.
"Scan the room," Stokes said.
"You're already seeing it," she told him.
Stokes studied the woman and then Maddox.
"Give me sound," the Major said.
"It's already on."
"Increase gain," he said.
The woman gave Stokes a look that suggested he was simple. She must have noticed he was a Major, though, because that was all the complaint she made. With several taps, she brought a faint whispering voice to the speaker. The other two monitors glanced at her. She became more alert. With a tap, she brought the sound to maximum audio.
"After that,"
a querulous voice said, a voice that definitely didn't belong to Maddox.
"We'll use the submersible."
"Who's talking to the prisoner?"
the woman asked.
"Initiate full lockdown," Stokes said. "Call security and alert Star Watch. Captain Maddox is about to attempt a prison break."
"Don't worry about him," the woman said. "Gas will do the trick."
"Gas?" asked Stokes.
"It will put him to sleep like a baby,"
the woman said while tapping another control. Chapter 14. Meta adjusted her power gloves, wanting to get the rescue started already. She sat beside Second Lieutenant Maker as he maneuvered a submersible under the radioactive ice of former Greenland. The small Scotsman seemed right at home with the blue shining ice above and the sluggish seawater all around. According to him, no one was a better space pilot or underwater operator than he. Meta hated the aqua environment. It felt alien with the hisses, groans, and squealing metal all around them. Too much pressure pushed against their craft, which had never been designed to go quite this deep, she was sure.
"Soon now, lass," Keith told her. "Then the fun begins."
Meta nodded absently. She was a strong woman, born on a 2G planet. Her muscles and bones were denser than a regular human. She had learned that some of her differences were the result of new men experimentation. Enemy agents had secretly run her mining colony world as a genetic laboratory. Her body armor hid a voluptuous figure, while her long blonde hair was tucked under a battle helmet. Maddox and she were lovers. He had always come for her in the end. If she had to today, Meta was going to do the same thing for him.
"You're sure Maddox knows the plan?"
Meta asked.
"Why are you asking me?" Keith said. "Ask the Tin Men."
Meta glanced sidelong at the two waiting androids. They looked human enough, but she knew the truth. Under the pseudo-flesh, they were composed of circuits, metal, and cybertronic mesh. They also wore diving gear and carried weapons. They would be going into the